Now, connected to this cathedral, right next door, is my house. And there is a very important piece of furniture in that house. Something my guess would be every one of you have in your house. It's the daddy chair. A big, overstuffed, comfortable chair. Actually, it's a new one. Deacon Bob Sontag noticed there's a big rip in one and went out and got this really, really nice, overstuffed chair. And my idea of heaven, at least a foretaste of heaven, is at the end of the day, I say my prayers, and I have a privilege of having a chapel, put on my jam jams, get into that chair, my puppies will be at my feet, I have tincture of Scotland within easy reach, and then to have a mystery story in my hands. Now, I have some particular tastes in mysteries. I don't really like contemporary stories. I like a mystery story that takes me somewhere else. There's all sorts of these out there, different genres. There's kind of Egyptian Sherlock Holmes in the Egypt of the Pharaohs solving problems around the pyramids. I like those. I like the ones set in the Roman Republic or the Roman Empire. I love to kind of imagine myself walking down those streets of ancient Rome. There's the medieval genre. I like those too. And of course, I love the late 19th century, the Sherlock Holmes era. But there's all kinds of mysteries put in that time. And you know, as Sherlock often told Dr. Watson, it's the details you have to watch. All sorts of evidence is out there, what happened, who done it. But it's the details of what doesn't fit in. That's what unlocks the truth of the mystery. Jesus, of course, was the most incomparable storyteller that has ever lived on this earth. And the scriptures tell us he taught only in parables. He used stories to unlock the mysteries of the kingdom of heaven. And there as well, to understand or to begin to understand the parable, you have to pay close attention to the details, especially the things that don't fit in, that really confound common sense. The sting in the tail, the stuff where you listen to it, if you're really listening, say, that doesn't make any sense. I wouldn't do that. That's crazy. It's there that the mysteries of the kingdom of heaven are being revealed. Today's gospel, the story of the prodigal son, is perhaps one of the greatest stories ever told. It is behind many of the great literature of the world. But there's things in that story I'm sure you've heard about before that if you think about it, it doesn't make sense. Remember, the land of Israel was sacred, and not just the whole nation. Family's land was their portion with the Lord. Generation after generation didn't give it away or sell it off. They added to it with a lot of hard work and sacrifice. So, if this wasn't a room full of deacons and their spouses, but a room full of first century Judeans, farmers, people who owned sheep, fishermen, they'd be listening to this father who, when the young brat comes up and says, give me my portion of the land, and he gives it to them, they'd shake their heads. That guy's nuts. Younger sons didn't get inheritance. They got the crumbs from the table. So the people who first heard Jesus tell this story would have said, oh my goodness. And then, predictably, the kid goes off, goes right through the money with loose Gentile women, ends up feeding pigs. Remember, pigs were unclean. They horrified Jews. Now, I have had an experience feeding pigs. As a Holy Cross novice in 1956 in southern Vermont, I quickly learned you don't get between a pig and its supper. So this poor young man, raised in wealth, would love to fill his belly with the scraps that those unclean, disgusting pigs were eating. And then he comes to himself. And he rehearses that speech, which my guess is all of us have made at one time or another to our father. You be careful with that car. Don't play ball near the house in that window or all those mornings. And then you do. And then you kind of think, oh, what am I going to tell the old man? And you stand before him and say, Father, I have sinned against God and you. And then a good father, a wise father, a prudent father, probably would not save the son from the consequences of his bad choices. He'd love the son, but say, well, you're going to have to work a little harder and help pay off the dent in the car or whatever it was. But this father, he's been up on the hill waiting for the kid to come home. He runs out, embraces him, bring out the fancy clothes, the ring, the sandals, kill the fat cat. Let's throw a party. I want to tell you, if your kids raise their kids that way, don't send them to the Catholic schools. They will be unteachable, obnoxious, narcissists. It's not the way to raise children. But again, the parable is trying to tell us something that appears throughout the whole Bible. God is something more. God is different than we imagine. God is so true, we really have no adequate language to exhaustively describe it. So it's not the way a father should raise a son, but it is the way the God and Father of Jesus Christ relates to his people. And remember the whole context of the parable. The Pharisees were scandalized that Jesus ate and drank with sinners. He touched them. He entered into ordinary life with them. He reached out to them. The whole point of the holiness code was to say, God is holy, Israel must be holy, so separate yourselves from the Gentiles and sinners. And it was a good law. It helped Israel survive as God's portion. But Jesus is the fulfillment of that law. And he doesn't save by exclusion. He saves by inclusion. He reaches out. He shows God's love is unreasonable, insane, nuts, over the top. And then comes that last part of the parable. You know, is it the parable of the prodigal son? Is it the parable of the prodigal father? Or is it the parable of the prodigal older brother? He had done everything right. He kept working on the land. Part of that land the old man gave away, he should have inherited. So he comes home. Some gossipy servant says, you know, your crazy dad, he's throwing a party for that kid. The big brother was livid and on with it. But the father comes out to him and says, your brother who was lost has been found. Everything I have belongs to you. But we had to rejoice because the one who is lost is now saved. There isn't one explanation for that parable, and there isn't supposed to be. The parables, to some degree, tell us. We identify ourselves with the brat, with the dad, with the older brother. We are being described in those parables. And it doesn't matter if it's the first time we really hear it or we've heard it as often as even Deacon Chuck has, over and over again. There is always something in the mercy and goodness of God that we need to rediscover. And it's supposed to get us a little upset. We're supposed to say, I don't get that about God. Or we're supposed to say, oh, now I begin to understand. Or we're supposed to say, this is a puzzle, maybe an important one that I should try all my life to try to fathom. So as the body of deacons, their spouses, as your unworthy servant, the bishop, here's the word of God. Let us remember that the mysteries of God are not things we know nothing about. But after we have begun to discover the truth, we really haven't even begun.